We're holding on Hey Ahmed Bey's 12 lines from the bottom. Gemara says Gufa. Getting back to something that we learned before previously on Daf Gimel, Amar Shmuel, Shnayim Shadonu, if two people judge a Din Torah, or one for that matter, Dinehem Din, their Din is a valid Din, meaning, in other words, that we do, it does have all the regular Dinim of a Din Torah, even though, as we said, you're supposed to have three. Based in a chotzuf, but it's called a chutz v'tikin basin because they're over on what the Chachamim said, that you should always judge with three. So in other words, we had the very beginning of the Masechta, Machloikas, whether Midaraisa, you always require three, according to Rav Abahu, or whether Midaraisa, you really only require one. Nevertheless, the Chachamim said that you should have three, and therefore, if you have only two or one, then it's a chutz b'dika basin that they're violating that takana of the Chachamim. Now, one point is, in other words, So the Ran talks about what we're talking about over here, where the Bala Din did not accept them as Dayanim. If they accepted them, then everybody would agree that it would be fine. And here the Gemara is going to say that that Rav Abahu is disagreeing with Shmuel. But if they accepted that these people are going to judge for them, then it would be fine because they themselves voluntarily accepted it. But the Ran goes on to say maybe not actually maybe even you could talk about where it was a zabla based in zebur leyecha, each side picked for themselves one dayan who they think will better represent them, so nevertheless though they still should have a third dayan, and if they don't then they're based in chotzev. So the Gemara says, Yosef Rav Nachman, Rekom Allah Hoshmaita. Rav Nachman was sitting over and telling over the statement of Shmuel, Esvei Rav Rav Nachman. So Rav says to Rav Nachman, I have a contradiction. So you're telling me that two dayanim are in fact enough. But later on in the Masechta, when we start talking about the details of how Beis Din judges cases, so first the Mishnah describes what happens, you know, if they come to a unanimous verdict. And then it talks about what happens if two of them say one way and one the other way. By dinei mamonos, you don't need a super majority, so therefore you just go according to a plain majority and that's that. But the Mishnah later on says, afilu shnayim mezaken or shnayim mechayven ve'echad oyma eni yodea. What if two of them say he's innocent, or two say he's guilty, but one says, I don't know? Now, do we say, well, look, even if he had said against them, we would still pass him like them because we go according to the majority? No, we don't say that. The Mishnah says, Yisifu adayonim, we have to add an extra dayan so we have three members who are actually judging and saying some kind of verdict. Now, the Isa, if you're telling me what Shmuel says, that two are enough, lehevu kishnayim shadonu, then what's the problem? Just consider this panel of three, as though to begin with they were two, because one of them is saying, I don't know how to judge, and therefore, so you have two, and according to Shmuel, that would be fine. To be sure, the Ran points out, I mean, the Shmuel's talking only b'dieved, Shnayim Shadonu. So we're not saying l'chatchila you should have less than three, but nevertheless, Rava is asking that since they started out with three, then now it shouldn't be considered a based in chotzuf. So now it should be fine to just finish the judgment with two of them that are giving a verdict, even though now if among the three, if one of them said chayev and one said zakai and one said I don't know, okay, you'd have to add dayanim, no choice in the matter because you don't have a majority. But you have two of them anyway that are saying chayev, so of necessity, even the third one, regardless whether he had said chayev or zakai, the guy would still be chayev anyhow because you go according to the majority. So then, what's according to Shmuel? What's the point of adding an extra dayan? And Rav Nachman answers, shiny and awesome, because it's different over there. Ikra died to the tlossi yisivi. Because to begin with, they sat as a Beis Din intending that there should be three, meaning that there should be three opinions, and not that one of them should say any idea. Hocha lava died to the tlossi yisivi, as opposed to the case Shmuel is talking about, they didn't originally intend to sit as a Beis Din of three. They sat as a Beis Din of two, and Shmuel is holding that would be fine, except that it's a Beis Din chotzuf. All right. The Gemara says Eise. Rava says I have another contradiction on Shmuel. A Braisa says Reb Shimon Gamliel Hadin B'Shloisha. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, you know why you have to have a din Torah judged by at least three dayanim? Reason why. He's saying the din has to be done by Shloisha. Upshara b'shnayim. But when it comes to a pshara, when it comes to where Beis Din is going to try to make a compromise between the two sides, then it's enough to have two dayanim. So yofa koyach pshara mikoyach hadin. And we see, therefore, that a pshara to make a compromise between the two sides is better, has a stronger power in a way than a din where the dayanim actually paskin, this is how it's going to be. Shnayim shadanu, because if two people judge, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, baladinim yicholim last of a hen. And afterwards, the baladinim are able to change their mind and say, you know what? The truth is, why are we doing a Beis Din of only two? A Beis Din is supposed to be three. Ushnaim shall also pshara, as opposed to if two dayanim made a pshara, ain't baladinim yicholim last of a hen, then the baladinim are not allowed to change their mind, meaning, in other words, because that's it, the pshara has been made, and they have to accept it. So Tosfos wonders what's going on over here. I mean, if they to begin with accepted the panel of two, then why are we saying that they'd be able to change their mind as far as the din? And why are we saying they would? So what's the difference? Why are we saying by din they would be able to change their mind? After all, as Shmuel had said, so Rava is asking this as a question on Shmuel, but still, if they accepted this panel of two to be their dayanim, then what's the problem? How can they now back out of it and say, you know what, we should have had a panel of three? So Tosfos explains it means they came to two. They said, what we want is either judge us the way that Beis Din usually judges us, or make us a pshara the way that Beis Din usually makes a pshara. So now, when it comes to the Din Torah, they're able to say, but you know what? You too judged a certain way, but the fact is, a full Beis Din of three might have done differently. But when it comes to a pshara though, when it comes to a din, in other words, what it is they're accepting on themselves only insofar as the dayanim judge according to din Torah. And as the Gemara is going to point out soon, you can have where the dayanim make a mistake, where therefore the balei din can say, you know what, that wasn't according to the Torah because the fact is it was a mistake. So similarly over here with a Beis Din of two, they can say That what you judge is not necessarily din Torah. We want a proper din Torah with three, as opposed to by a pshara. They're willing to accept whatever the pshara is, and therefore that's binding. So therefore, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, you see that a pshara is better than a din.
So with two people, you could have one's going to be happy, one won't be happy. So then, what happens then? If the pshara is going to be good for one person,
The whole definition of a pshara is it's a middle ground between the two of them. So what happens afterwards if one of them is satisfied and one not? I mean, we're saying ain't baladini yichodim lasaba, and that's it. They can't change their mind. Now we're going to get into the sugya soon. We're going to get into the dinim of pshara and when Beis Din is allowed to make a pshara and when not. But yeah, the whole idea is that a pshara, and we're going to have tanoim who say you don't make a pshara in the first place. It means that somebody is getting wronged, because after all, it's either, for example, either Reuven owes Shimon 100 or he doesn't owe him 100. So you make a pshara, you make him pay 50. Somebody is losing out over here. Well, both of them are losing out, maybe, but whatever. The point is that as much as possible, pshara is meant to be exactly that, a compromise, something, a middle ground between the two of them. We hope that both of them will be satisfied with it, but even if not, we're saying ein bala dinin yicholim laksa behem, that they can't change their mind. So the point is, Reb Shimon Gamliel is clearly saying that a din Torah with two is not a valid din Torah, and the valid dinim are able to say later on, whichever side lost the case, is able to say, you know what, this wasn't din Torah, because din Torah requires three dayanim, and I want the case rejudged. You're going to say, well, very well, the Chachamim disagree with Reb Shimon Gamliel, and they say that it's enough to have two dayanim, or even one, like Shmuel says. The problem is, didn't Reb Abohu say previously that everybody agrees, meaning both the Chachamim and Reb Shimon Gamliel, hold that two who judged is not a valid din Torah? So how now could we say that, so how is Shmuel able to say that two is a valid din Torah? Well, the Gemara answers back, Gavra, Gavra Karamis. Are you trying to point out a contradiction between two different Amoraim? Rabbi Bahu may understand the Macholikas of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim to be saying that everybody agrees that two is not enough for Din Torah. So Rabbi Bahu would say, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying this in the Braisa, and the Chachamim agree with him. Shmuel doesn't have to agree with Rabbi Bahu's understanding of the Machlokas. He can say, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says this, fine, but the Chachamim disagree with him and say that even with two it would be a valid Din Torah. So therefore, so that's not a contradiction on Shmuel. Tosfos again brings up the point over here, which they brought up previously against Rashi, that at the very beginning of the Masechta, we talked about the Lamdaf Gimel, we talked about the whole matter of Iruv Parashias, Kosov Khan, when the Torah says, three times that you have to bring a case, El HaLekim, meaning to the Dayanim, and it mentions it in connection with the Shomer, doesn't mean in the middle over there you have the words, Asher Yoma Ki Huzeh, which refers to a Moed of a Mitzvah. Is there an Iruv Parashias, Kosov Khan? Is there that Pasuk is mixed in and brought in from a different context, namely the context of a Malva and a Loiva, and that would mean the concept of requiring three Dayanim is also needed Minatora, for they are also. Or would we say that no, there's no Iruv Parashias, and the whole concept of Moed Mikzas applies on the concept that you need three Dayanim rather for Moed Mikzas applies only to a Shomer and not necessarily to other cases of Malva, Veloiva, and so forth. So again, Rashi had explained previously that. The opinion of Shmuel over here and the various other opinions that we've been mentioning that say that one or two is enough to die and are enough as Dayanim, evidently they hold that there's no Iruv Parashias Kosov Khan, that we don't say the Pasuk is talking about both a Shomer and a Malva and Loiva, rather it's only talking about a Shomer, and therefore we don't have a source in a Pasuk that with a Malva and Loiva you should need three Dayanim. And therefore, so this would go according to that. And again, Tosfos asks on Rashi that doesn't seem to fit over here. Why is the Gemara then wondering, can we find somebody who argues with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? Sure, whoever holds that there is Iruv Parashias, Kosov Khan, is going to disagree with him. So Tosfos explains that, as they explained before, that no, with the Gemara had brought before Drosha from the words B'tzedek Tishpat Amisecha, which is in the singular, you singular should judge your fellow Yid with righteousness, and we learn from that that one die-in is enough. So Shmuel and Rabbi Bahu are not arguing whether there's Iruv Parashias or not. What they agree. They're both saying within the opinion that there is Iruv Parashias, that you do have of the Pasuk over there refers to Shomerim, and it also in the middle digresses a moment to refer to Malva and Loiva. Nevertheless, within that, we can also argue, does that mean that everybody holds, therefore, that you have to have three Dayanim, or Shmuel says not necessarily? Okay. So the bottom line is that Shmuel holds that two Dayanim, or even one Dayan, is enough. We talked about the other day that a Yochid Mumcha, we talked about yesterday, actually a Yochid Mumcha, an individual who's a Mumcha, who's a known expert, would be able to judge Yechidi. With that said, though, of course, it says in Pirkei Avos, Alti Don Yechidi, don't judge alone, Shein Don Yechidi, Ela Echad, because only the one, Hashem, can judge alone, and therefore, so Dayan shouldn't, if possible, judge alone. Better that he should judge together with others, because that way he's more likely to come to, that way he's more likely to come to a valid verdict. In effect, there is a machlokas rishonim, by the way, who the halacha is like over here, like Shmuel or like Rabbi Bahu. We had the other day also in the Gemara that the Gemara had said that Rava disagrees with Shmuel. So Tosfos had brought the halachas gedolos who said the halacha is like Shmuel, that in fact that one or two by themselves could judge. On the other hand, the Rif disagrees and says the halacha is like Rabbi Bahu and so forth. And the Rambam mentioned that one Dayan is good, but two not. And how is that? And one point is, in other words, that Mefoshim point out that the Rambam may hold, but the Chachamim decided to say that two are possible, because when we know for sure that he's a mumcha is one thing, but when we have two, we don't necessarily know that there's such mumchim, and therefore we can't say that it would be allowed. The Gemara says, Gufa, now let's get back to another point that we said before. So now let's revisit what Rav Abahu said. Two judge dinim mominus, the divrei hakol and dinehem din. Everybody would agree that their din is not a valid din, which we just said Rav Abahu disagrees with Shmuel on that point. And again, according to Tosfos, Rav Abahu, when he says l'divrei hakol, he may not mean actually according to everybody. He may mean within the opinion that Iruv Parshias, Kosov Khan, that the psukim about the shomer are also referring to a malva and loiva. Within that, everybody would agree that you need three dayanim. But you could have other opinions that say that there's no Iruv Parshias and the pasuk is only talking about a shomer, and Rav Abahu was not addressing those opinions. Anyway, a state of Abba or of Abahu. So Rav Abba says, Rav Abahu, then I have a contradiction on you. Later on in the Masechta, we learn a case, Donas Ad-Din, a person judged a din, and don in the singular implies that it was only one dayan. He mistakenly declared the one who was supposed to be guilty and who was supposed to pay, he judged him innocent. Or the one who was in it, who was really supposed to be innocent, he judged him guilty and having to pay. Timeas atoher tier as a tomei, or he declared something that was supposed to be toher tomei, or vice versa. And later on in the Masechta, we're going to deal with these dinim in detail, and we're going to deal with what exactly is meant over here by Timeas atoher tier as a tomei. If he declared it tomei, so fine, what's the problem? We declare it toher, and that's that. So we're going to talk about those cases where he mixed it with other peiros or different things like that. So the point is, now we have an irrevocable fact. So Masha also, what he did is done. We don't make him retract his psak din. However, he has to pay out of pocket to the person that he wronged. So it's very simple to understand. Of course, in the case of Chiyav as Hazakai, Vizikai as Achayav, it'll mean. So he said, Ruven, you have to pay Shimon 100, and it turns out that was a mistake. He misunderstood the halacha. Then it means that the din is still a din. Shimon gets to keep the 100, but he's going to have to reimburse Ruven 100 out of his own pocket. In the case of Timeas HaTorah, Tiras HaTomeh, later on in the Masechta, we'll deal with in more detail what is meant by that. It means, for example, that he declared something Tahar that really is Tomeh, and then the guy went and said, okay, well, if it's Tahar, then I can mix it with my other fruit, and later on, it turns out it really was supposed to be Tomei, and therefore now he has a loss that all the other fruit is Tomei as well, and so forth. We'll get into that. We'll get into that in the third parak of Armasechta, that's the shame. Anyway, so the point is that the Mishnah is saying, Masha Osri. What he did is a done deal. So we see that even though he was a one person, and it uses the expression done, which is in the singular, nevertheless, we're saying it seems to be a valid din. Where's the point to you, Rav Abahu? It shouldn't be. So Rav Abahu answers, because the case we're talking about over here may be where they accepted him on themselves. Here all this time we were talking about where they didn't accept him. He summons them to Beis Din, and they have to come. But now we could be talking about where they voluntarily accepted that this one dayan will judge for them. Well, the Gemara asks, well, then in that case, if he made a mistake, why is he paying out of pocket? They were willing to accept whatever he says. Rashi, by the way, mentions over here that later on in the Masechta, when we deal with this case in more detail, the Gemara is going to explain to Nosav and Nosav Bayad that he actually took the money from one and gave it with his own hands to the other, because otherwise it's only Gromov and Azikin, etc. Anyway, the point is that if they accepted him on themselves, then why is he having to pay out of pocket? So the answer is, because the case would be, we're to begin with, before they started the Din Torah, they said, we want you to judge us according to the Din of Torah. Well, when he made a mistake, it wasn't the Din of Torah, and therefore they were able to say, you know what, we wouldn't have accepted such a verdict had we known at the time that it was against the Torah, that you in fact made a mistake, and therefore we want to, and therefore, so we would say, then in that case, what he did is done. What he did is done. We don't undo the verdict. However, we do make him pay. Unless, as we learned yesterday, if he's a mumcha l'rabim and has reshus from the Reish Galusa or the Nasi or whatever, then that gives him judicial immunity, and then he's potter from paying. Okay, well, let's deal with, anyway, what the Gemara is going to deal with in a minute, sort of the digression. What kind of mistake are we talking about anyway? What kind of mistake exactly are we talking about that the dayan made, where we're talking about the din remains a valid din, however he has to reimburse the losing party? He lamed the Talmud by Mishnah. Do you mean that he made a mistake about something that it says clearly in the Mishnah? Nope. Well, Amr of Sheshis, Amr of Ami, or on the side over here it says Rav Asi, really it's supposed to be. Talmud by Mishnah, Choyzer. No, if he makes a mistake in something that actually says straight out in a Mishnah, Choyzer, then we have to undo the whole verdict. So it's not a matter of him reimbursing. Okay, in the case of Tomei and Tahar, there may be no choice but to reimburse because he caused a direct hezek. But at least in the case, for example, where he said, Reuven, you owe Shimon 100, and he took money out of Reuven's pocket and gave it to Shimon, we would say that because it was a mistake in the Dvar Mishnah, Choyzer, we would undo it completely. We would start all over again. We would say, okay, Shimon, give back the 100. And let's start over again and see whether Reuven actually owes it to you or not. So that can't be the case. Ela detar b'shikol adas. So obviously we must mean that he made a mistake in logical analysis, in deciding between two equally compelling logical alternatives, and he decided the wrong one. Well, heichi dami b'shikol adas. Well, what does that mean? I mean, if you have a balance, if you could go either way, then how can you say he made a mistake? Amar Papa, so the Papa explains like this. Suppose you have two Tanoim or two Amiroyim who are arguing against one another. Now the halacha has not been explicitly stated like one or the other. However, the general mahalach, the general approach that Talmud Chachamim and Dayanim are taking is according to one of them. Rashi explains the word sugya, it literally is the Aramaic word for going, for a path, a mahalach, a way of walking. So in other words, what you have is, there's you'll find that when Dayanim and when Talmud Chachamim are discussing this point, they tend to come down more on the side of one of them. One thing is, Mephoshim point out, we find often in the Gemara, often the Gemara will have, it spends a lot of time discussing one particular opinion. The Gemara will bring, you'll have a Mishnah, that a Mishnah or a Braisa or whatever, that mentions two opinions, and the Gemara will go and discuss for a while the ramifications of one of their opinions. In fact, many Rishonim taka use that as a simon, that the halacha must be like that opinion, the very fact that the Gemara is spending so much time on analyzing it. The Ramban makes a related point, not quite the same thing, but more precisely. For example, often the Gemara will say, here we just had, for example, according to Rav Abahu, Ula Alma, that everybody agrees that everybody, Ledivrei Hakol, he said, according to everybody, there's such and such a din. The Gemara will often say a statement, the Gemara will often take it as a given that everybody agrees with a certain statement. Dekola Alma Moida, Dekola Alma, everybody would agree, Moida Bishtasha Kosovo, Ain Sarah Chakaimai, for example, that we learned about recently in Baba Basra, that everybody would agree that if a person admits that he wrote a shtar, and therefore that's not forged, then we don't need to be Mekayim it. He can still claim that he paid it, but he can't claim that it was forged or whatever. The sort of Malva doesn't have to validate the signatures or other examples like that. So it means, in other words, that the general Mahalach of the people who are learning Torah is to follow that opinion. Nevertheless, though, the official Halacha has not been decided like that. So therefore, V'ozaliyu V'ovid Ki'idach. Now this Dayan goes and paskins according to the other opinion. So that would be Tov B'Shikol Adas, because Hainu Shikol Adas, that is an example of Tov B'Shikol Adas, because if he had known that the Sugya D'Alma, that the general understanding among Talmud Chachamim is the other way, then he would have passed him like that. But nevertheless, he is a great enough Talmud Chacham that he is capable of arguing on that, and therefore, but nevertheless, we can call it a toast, because he wouldn't have done that had he in fact known that the general run of Talmud Chachamim is the other way around. So in a similar vein, I mean, nowadays we don't paskin from the Mishnah, but you have a similar concept. For example, you can have a din that it says straight out in Shulchan Aruch, and all of the Noisei Kalim agree with, and then you can have sometimes, for example, where you'll have the Shach and Taz, or when it comes to Chosh and Mishpat, the Smeh and the Shach will be arguing on the details of a din. So then there's no official Psak Halacha like one or the other of them. We won't have that until Mashiach comes. But nevertheless, Sugya Dalma in general, the Loim De Torah Paskin like one of them. So now we're saying the Dayan passed him the other way. So we're saying the din is a din, but he's going to have to reimburse unless he's a mumcha l'rabin. Or again, unless it was a base din of three. And by the way, from this comes the whole concept that we've mentioned before in this year. There's a concept called kinli. Many times when you have exactly that, when you have a machlokas rishonim or achronim that's been undecided, then a party to the din Torah can say kinli. You know what? You Dayan are paskinim like so and so, but I hold that the halacha is like the other one, which would be more favorable to me. So and that would be a valid argument, and therefore we do have to take that into consideration when paskinim the halacha. The fact that sometimes there can be that concept of kinli that you want to say the halacha. For example, in this particular regard, is like the smeh, but the fact is, the way the shach holds on this particular thing is more favorable to me, and I would argue the halacha is like the shach, and how can you prove otherwise? Anyway, so this is this is what we mean by tal b'shikul adas, where you have the general run of dayanim and tamid chachamim is one way, and here this dayan judges the other way. So the point is, therefore, we penalize him because after all, he was over. You know, here we learned before, it says in Pirkei Avos, alti don yechidi, don't judge alone. He was over on that, therefore we make him pay. Therefore we make him pay for his mistake. But we don't undo the whole din, unlike if he had been toya, unlike if he had made a mistake on something that it says blatantly in the Mishnah, or to put it in modern terms, that it says blatantly in Shulchan Aruch. Okay. Well, so far we have Shmuel and Rabbi Bahu arguing about this point of whether you must have three dayanim, or whether it's enough to have fewer dayanim. So far we said that Rabbi Bahu would agree if they accepted fewer dayanim over themselves, and they didn't say, judge for us according to Din Torah, then fine, for sure, then the judgment can't be reversed. But if they didn't accept them, or if they did, and they said, we want you to judge us according to Din Torah, and it turns out he made a mistake, then we're saying that the judgment can be reversed. But meanwhile, according to Shmuel, to begin with, even without them agreeing, even without them both accepting it, you could still have a base din of two, or even of one. Well, the Gemara says, Lema Katanoi. Should we say that this machloikas Shmuel and Rabbi Bahu actually reflects a machloikas of Tanoim? A braisa says, Bitsua Bishloisha Divir Rameir. Rameir says that Bitsua requires three. Bitsua is another name for Pshara that we started talking about before. Now, Rav Meir holds, we're going to learn on Omer Beis, there are many different opinions about whether we should be doing Pshara or not, and Rav Meir is one of the opinions who holds that we shouldn't. We shouldn't do pshara. We should just paskin the din. So therefore, Rav Meir calls it bitsua, which comes from a word that means the word bitsua is related to some words that mean robbery. So like uveseya beirach, as the Gemara is going to quote on Omer Beis. So Rav Meir is calling it bitsua because the Yad Ramah explains, because he doesn't like the whole idea of making a pshara in the first place. But nevertheless, if you're going to, Rav Meir says, for it to be binding, you need three. V'chomem pshara b'yachid, whereas the Chachamim say pshara can be done by a yachid. So they use the word pshara, which is a more positive word, because they don't have a problem with doing it. And they say that one individual can impose a pshara on the two of them. The word pshara also, the word, you have the word in Lashon Kodesh, poshrin, which means like lukewarm water, neither cold nor hot. So pshara is like that, it's like halfway in between. The Yad Ramah also points out that the word bitsua, written that a mayor used, can also be related to a word for breaking, because he's like breaking the thing in half and saying, here, you can have half and you can have half. Anyway, so the Gemara says savruha. Now we think, for purposes of the question, Tosfos points out, by the way, that even Rav Meir, who says that you need three for bitsua, he would agree that there is a difference. By din, you go according to the majority. So if two of them end up saying chayev and one says zakai, then we make the guy chayev and so forth. Whereas with a pshara, it would have to be, according to Rav Meir, that all three of them would have to agree to this pshara. All three of the dayanim. Anyway, the chum say you only need yachin. So, savrua, we think, for purposes of the question, dekola amo makshin and pshara ladin, that everybody would agree that we make a hekesh between pshara and din, that whatever applies to one applies to the other. Rashi explains, we learn that from a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, where it describes that David was doing mishpat utzdaka. Now, mishpat means strict judgment. Tzedakah means tzedakah. So what does that mean? What is he doing, mishpat or tzedakah? So further on, later on, the Gemara explains later on Amud Beis that this is talking about pshara. So we see, therefore, there's a hekesh between them that it puts mishpat and tzedakah together. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. And then there are other psukim the Gemara is going to bring on Amud Beis, and Tosfos doesn't like those explanations of where we learn it from. The Maharam shifts as another possibility that neither Rashi nor Tosfos have brought up is the Gemara may be learning it from the pasuk that says tzedek tirdoth, where one tzedek refers to judgment and the other one refers to pshara. Anyway, so Savrur de Kula Amma Makshin and Pshara Ladin, we start with the assumption both Rav Meir and the Chachamim would agree that you compare Pshara and Din, that both of them would say that whatever applies to one applies to the other. Well, my La Bahakamithligi, well then that would seem to be the Machloikas. The Mar Sava Din Bishloisha, Rav Meir holds a Din must be done by three Dayanim, therefore Pshara must also be done by three. Whereas the Chachamim hold it's enough for a din Torah to be done by two or one, and therefore Pshara can also be done by two or one. So then in that case, that would be exactly the Machlokas of Shmuel and Rabbi Bahu. And the answer is Lloyd, to Kol Amad Din B'Shloisha. No, everybody could agree that a din Torah has to be done by three, like Rabbi Bahu says. B'Hocha Mitzvah, the Machlokas would be, do we make that Hekesh? The Marasav HaMakshin and Pshara Ladin, Rabbi Meir would hold that we make a Hekesh between Pshara and Din, so therefore if Din has to be with three, so does Pshara. Omar Sava, whereas the Chum hold Loi Makshin and Pshara Ladin, we don't make that Hekesh, and therefore sure, Din requires three, but Pshara you can get away with fewer. Okay, fine. Well, so the Gemara says, Lema Tlosa Tanoiv Pshara. Does that mean then it comes out, apparently, that there are three different opinions of Tanoim about Pshara, because we also had, after all, we had Rav Shimon Gamliel before saying that it's enough to have two for a Pshara. Rav Shimon Gamliel had said at the bottom of the previous Amud that a Din Torah, you have two Dayanim, then later on the Bali Dinim can complain and start over again, whereas when it comes to a Pshara, they can't do that. So it seems like we have three opinions. It sounds like a mayor requires three. Rav Shimon Gamliel was fine with two, but there has to be two. And the Chachamim say that even one is good. So, and we would rather not do that. Even when we have a machlokas, we'd rather not make it a multi-way machlokas if we can help it. Well, the Gemara says, Amar of Acha, Breidin of Ika, the Itamer of Yema Vashlemia. No, there are actually only two opinions. Manda Amatreya Filochad Nami. Rav Shimon Gamliel, who had mentioned before about two, he would in fact hold that even one is enough. Because he holds, the point is, he holds there's no hekesh between din and between mishpat and tzedakah, between a psak din and a bitsua and a pshara. So therefore, what's the difference? Two or one? Either way, you don't have three. So Afilu Chad Nami, Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that even one is enough. The fact that it says two is only sadi. As a practical matter, if you have two, then they can function as edim to say, to give edos about the pshara that they did. Whereas if you had only one, then Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, fine, it is a valid pshara, but nevertheless, if you want to hold them to that, how are you going to demonstrate that the pshara was made? Therefore, more practically, you want to have two. But in fact, Rav Shimon Gamliel would have been fine with a pshara with one. So you have two opinions, Rav Shimon Gamliel on the Chachamim on one side, and Rav Meir on the other side. Tosfos actually points out the Gemara should have said on the face of it that according to Shmuel there's no question there's machlokas tanoim because Rav Meir is clearly requiring three for a din, so he's clearly arguing with Shmuel. But according to Rav Bahu, we don't necessarily have to say that it's machlokas tanoim because again they would draw the distinction between din and pshara. Usually the Gemara would do that kind of thing. Here, for some reason, Tosfos wonders why it doesn't do that. But that's the bottom line is, in other words, that we do have, it's true there is a Machloikas Tanoim on the subject, but it doesn't necessarily map to the Machloikas of Shmuel and Rabbi Bahu because they could all agree that a Din Torah does require three and Machloikas is only about Pshara. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Ashi, Shma mina pshara ein tzrich kinyan. The fact that we just said that with a pshara, you need them to be edim, you need them to be able to later on give edus that the pshara was made. That indicates, says Rav Ashi, Shma mina pshara ein tzrich kinyan. You see from that when a pshara is made, you don't need a kinyan on it. They say a pshara, and therefore therefore that's it. The pshara is binding, and therefore and you don't need a kinyan in order to confirm it. Because Rav Ashi says, if you thought that it requires a kinyan, then the manda amat tzricha tzlosa lomali, then why would even Rav Meir, why would he say that you need three in order to have a pshara, tiski betrei v'liknamine? Shouldn't it be enough to have two and do a kinyan? Because, in other words, Rashi points out, and if you wanted to give a matana, for example, then that the kinyan would be enough. You don't need a matana to be done in front of Beis Din. The only reason Rav Meir of Apashtus would be saying that you need three is only liyapas toyach Beis Din, to strengthen the power of Beis Din, that they can impose their ruling even without a kinyan being involved. Well, then that shows that no kinyan is needed in the first place. Tosfos points out that Rav Meir himself seems to be indicating that even if usually you need hechra hadas, Rav Meir would say, fine, you need them to be able to discuss it and come to a verdict between them. We said before that over the pshara, you need all three of them to agree, but the point is at least you need to have a duly constituted basin for it. But fine, Rav Meir would be saying that even if they did exactly as three would and they fully deliberated and came to a decision about this pshara, nevertheless, it sounds like Rav Meir wouldn't accept it. Why? Because the opinion is irrelevant over here. Were opinion relevant, then that should work. However, the Gemara points out, no, v'hilchos pshara tzrich kinyan, no, the bottom line halacha is a pshara does require a kinyan. Even if you do it in the presence of three dayanim, nevertheless, for it to be binding, you need a kinyan. Tosfos discusses that in some detail over here, when exactly would this kinyan be made? Are we talking about before the pshara? Are we talking about before the dayanim say, you know what, we have a pshara that should hopefully satisfy both of you, and we're saying that before we issue that pshara, we want you to make a kinyan to say that you'll accept it, whether that you'll accept it. And then that's one way of explaining it. And then Tosfos brings from the halachas gedolos that no, it means that a kinyan afterwards, when the dayanim issue the pshara and he's willing to accept it, then he makes a kinyan in order to confirm that he's actually accepting that and that he's moichel on the rest of his claim . And then Tosfos also discusses in that case who is it that makes the kinyan. If it's before the din Torah, then of course both of them would have to make a kinyan because they both have to agree to it. If we talk about after the din Torah, on the face of it, maybe only the nitzba should have to make a kinyan, but no, in fact both of them have to make a kinyan because they're both losing out, and so on and so forth. And Tosfos goes and discusses this whole point in some detail. So now let's talk about this whole matter of pshara. So now the Gemara is going to bring a long braisa that discusses all the ins and outs of making a pshara. Tana Rabbanan, Tashem Sha Din B'Shloisha. So before we started quoting from a mayor, just as a din Torah has to be done, or actually it's a different braisa, but whatever. Just as a din Torah has to be done by three, Kach B'Tzua B'Shloisha, so a B'Tzua, a pshara, has to be done by a Beis Din of three. But the Braisa says, Nigmar Adin, once the judgment has been completed, then you're not allowed to make a betzia, you're not allowed to make a pshara. Now Rashi explains, it means when the dayanim have reached the point of saying the actual verdict, you plony your zaka, you plony your chayev, after that they can't go and make a compromise. Tosfos says, well, of course, and practically speaking, once the guy says, good, I won my case, why would he be even willing to listen to a compromise in the first place? So Tosfos says, okay, you could, and for Rashi, you could say, for example, what if the dayanim say, you know what, we do really want to make a compromise after all, so we're going to trick the guy. We're going to tell him, you know what, after all, we're not 100% sure of our psak din, maybe better to be on the safe side, you should accept a compromise. So we're saying that you're not allowed to do that. But Tosfos themselves prefers a different explanation. The Nigmar Adin doesn't mean when they actually paskin and said Ish Pliny Ata Chayiv, Ish Pliny Ata Zakai. It means once they've reached the point where they're ready to say that, they haven't actually given the verdict yet. So the Baal Adin don't know who they're going to decide in favor of, but the Dayanim themselves know already that they've figured it out. So therefore, at that point, then the Braisa is saying they can't now make a pshara. Now, so the Gemara Sarmash Ban Kash Simon. This is a simon for the names of the various Tanoim who are going to address this point about Bitsua. So the Gemara continues, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Noisha, Rabbi Yosef, Aglili, Omer, also Luf Tzaya, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Lozer, whatever, the son of Rabbi Yosef Aglili says, flat out, you're also to make a Btsia, you're also to make a Pshara in the first place. Even once they came to a Din Torah, even before they listened, even before the Dayanim listen to any of their arguments, Rabbi Eliezer says you're not allowed to make a pshara before they come to the din torah. Then sure, then before they even come to Beis Din, then sure you're allowed to arrange with them whatever you want. But once they came to the Beis Din, Rabbi Eliezer says you're not allowed to. The dayanim are not allowed to put together a pshara. And in fact, he continues, "V'chol abitseya harei zechoite." Anybody who does do a bitseya, anybody who does do a pshara like that, where they should have done a din Torah, is called a choite, is called a sinner. So one point is the Chazon Yechezkel, which is an important sefer on the Tosefta from Rabbi Yechezkel Abramsky, points out what Rabbi Eliezer means by that is b'diavad, it will work, it will be a pshara. Nevertheless, he's a choite for having done that in the first place. Not only that, anybody who praises somebody who makes a pshara under such conditions, says Rabbi Eliezer, harei zeh minayetz, then he's blaspheming and insulting Hashem. V'al zeh nema, b'tzeya berech niyetz Hashem. He says this is what the pasuk is referring to in Tillim, when it says, when the person blesses the Beit Seah, he is angering Hashem. Ela, so Rabbi Eliezer says, no. Yikov Adinasahar. The Dayanim, the judgment has to Yikov the mountain. Now, there's two explanations of what that means. The word Yikov can come from a word that means, the word Nekev means a hole. So Yikov Adinasahar means the din should pierce through the mountain. In other words, if this is what the din requires, that you're going to have to tunnel and pierce through a mountain, then fine, that's what you do. No pshoris. The other explanation, the Oruch brings this, as well as another explanation, that the word Yikov can also mean to state clearly, like we have later in the Masechta, when we talk about the dinim of Birkas Hashem, then you have the expression in the Pasuk, V'noikiv Shem Hashem most yumas, a person who clearly enunciates the name of Hashem when he's not supposed to, is Chayiv Misa. So we see that the word Noikiv also means to clearly state, so Yikov Adinus Ahor can also mean the Har, representing the Dayan, should clearly state the Halacha, and not equivocate, not be wishy-washy about it, and try to make a pshara. Shenemar and Rabbi Eliezer continues as the pasuk says, "Ki amishpat le'kim hu." The pasuk says the judgment is Hashem's, so you have no business tampering with it and making a pshara. V'chein Moshe Rabbeinu, v'chein Moshe ha'yomer. And in fact, we find Moshe similarly said to the dayanim exactly that you have to yikav adinus ahar. You have to judge the case and then let it pierce through the mountain, or you, the mountain, the dayan, clearly state it, and that's that. There's no compromises. But Rabbi Eliezer continues, there is room for compromise, but not in Beis Din, but only outside of it. Namely, Aval Aaron, Oyev Shalom, Veroyev Shalom, but Aaron loved peace and pursued peace, or Mason Shalom in Adam Lachaveiro, he would try to make peace between one person and another, so before they ever came to a Din Torah, then Aaron would try to talk them into making a pshara. So as soon as Rashi says before they came to him for a din torah, implying sometimes Aaron would sit as a dayan, but when he did, but like this, before he sits as a dayan, when he's still just meeting them on the street or something, then he would try to get them to make a pshara. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says, listen, Aaron himself was not a dayan in the first place. Who's the dayan in that time? Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, so Aaron, to begin with, is not required to do an actual din Torah, because anyway, he's not in the position of doing a din Torah, and therefore he's able to broker a compromise between them. Marashah points out the triple expression of here, Oyev Shalom, Veroyev Shalom, or Mason Shalom, and Mason Shalom, Ben Adam Lachaveroy. This reflects the three kinds of Shalom that there are. There's Shalom between a person and Hashem, there's Shalom within a person himself, and there's Shalom with other people. And he explains how these three phrases reflect those three kinds of Shalom. So that was Aaron's Midah. Shenemar, as in fact we find, the posuk that refers to Aaron. In fact, this posuk is in the Novi Malachi, who was the last of the Nevi'im, but the Medrash actually says that this was the hesped that Hashem himself said for Aaron when he passed away. The posuk says, Torah's emes hoisu afihu, the Torah of truth was in his mouth. V'avlo l'nimtza b'sfasav, and no unfairness was ever found on his lips. V'sholom of mishar holachiti, he went with me in peace and in straightness. V'rabim heishim me'oven, and he brought back many from doing averus. So therefore, so we see that this was Aaron's midah, was always oyev shalom, v'roid of shalom, to always try to make shalom between people. So therefore, so Rabbi Eliezer says, you want to have a pshara, fine, but do it before the case ever comes to Beis Din. Once it comes to Beis Din, no pshoras yikav adina sahar. There's a sicha from the Rebbe that talks about the at the end of the Torah and then in Parshas and in Vizoisa Bracha. Rashi brings the point over there that when Moshe passed away, the men cried for him for 30 days, but the women not. As opposed to when Aaron passed away, the passage says, Vayiv Goyse, called Beis Yisrael, the entire Jewish people, men and women, cried for him because he was Oyev Shalom, Veroyev of Shalom, as we're saying over here. So why, when Moshe is passing away, does it mention this point about Aaron? And the Rebbe develops the point in the Sicha because Moshe's midah is emes. So therefore, he has no ability to make a pshara because that would a pshara by definition is not emes. So therefore, so he couldn't. But now when it's the end of his life and he's reviewing his avoda that he had done through his life, he sees, you know what? There was value to Aaron's way of doing things, and the truth is, I should have adopted that avoda for myself and adapted it to my way of emes, but I shouldn't have just ignored it completely. So now, as a result, therefore, because he didn't, he just went according to the strict halacha. So the men mourned for him, but the women not, because they hadn't perceived his havoas shalom so much as opposed to Aaron. But that's the point. In other words, yeah, Moshe and Aaron, different approaches in Torah. Okay, so that's the first opinion. The Braisa continues, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says no, that pasuk, now we had Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosher, Rabbi Yitzchak Lili, and then we have plain Rabbi Eliezer, which is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkinus, a couple of generations earlier. Anyway, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says no, the pasuk which say a beirach niyetz Hashem, that you, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosher, Rabbi Yitzchak Lili brought, that pasuk is not talking about Betseya as in somebody who makes a pshara. That pasuk is teaching us a different din. Haresha gozal sashal chitim. Suppose a person stole a saw of wheat, the tochna, and he ground it, va'afar, and he made flour out of it, and he made dough out of it, va'afar, and he baked it, v'hifush mimena chala, and he took chala from it. Now, how do you have, where's chala coming in after you bake it? Normally you take chala before you bake it. Tosfos points out, that sometimes you have some things that are chayev and challah only after you bake them. You have certain kinds of mezonos where you made a batter instead of a dough, so it's not yet chayev and challah, but then you bake it into a form that now becomes to a cake or something where now it becomes chayev and challah. So that's why the Gemara is mentioning the baking. That's where the Eliezer is mentioning the baking before taking challah. Another point that some Mefoshim point out is the Gemara may be hinting at the point, we're going to talk in a minute, there's Machloikas, whether you make a bracha even on such food. So the Gemara may be hinting at that by mentioning the point about baking, because you don't eat it before it's baked. Anyway, Rabbi Eliezer says, Kate said, Mevarech, how can such a person make a bracha on the mitzvah of challah or even on the food? Ains a Mevarech, elamanoit. Such a person is not blessing Hashem, he's angering and then insulting Hashem. Val zenem, over tzei berach, nietz Hashem. So he says, this is what the pasuk means. Not like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosher Rabbi Yisag Lili, who had said, over tzei berach means the person who blesses the boitzea. No, it means the boitzea himself, this is the thief himself, berach, when he blesses Hashem for the mitzvah that he did. Nietz Hashem, he's angering and cursing Hashem. So in other words, Rabbi Eliezer is saying the pasuk has nothing to do with pshara in Beis Din. It's talking about this kind of case. Now there is a big machloikas we've shown him on the question, fine, we're saying you wouldn't say the bracha on the mitzvah over here, because the mitzvah itself is definitely a mitzvah abal b'avera. What about to make a bracha on such food? Now, the Rambam holds that not. The Rambam says that the same way as the Gemara is saying over here, you can't make a bracha on the mitzvah, the same way you can't make a bracha on the food either. It would also be blaspheming Hashem to do that. On the other hand, the Ravid strongly disagrees with that and says, no, what are you talking about? It's one thing to bracha on the mitzvah, but bracha on food, how can you tell the guy, go and eat without making a bracha? So the Maaseh in Shulchan Aruch, the halacha is that there's a difference whether the food is also that you have the similar machlokas about other kinds of yisurim. What if the food is treif or something? So the Alter Rebbe says that look, it depends whether we ate it b'shoygig or b'mezid. If he ate b'shoygig, then so either way, if he's mezid, he wouldn't make a bracha at the beginning. We would follow the Raivid in that and say that, or we would follow Rambam in that rather and say ein zeh mevorach al menorot, that he's blaspheming Hashem by making a bracha on stolen food. As far as the after bracha, that will depend whether it was b'shoygig or b'mezid. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha Omer, mitzvah l'tzaya. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says the polar opposite of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yishua, Rabbi Yisrael Glili. He says it's a mitzvah to make a pshara where possible. Even after they've come to Beis Din. Tenema, emes mishpat shalom, shifter b'sha'arechem. As the Pasuk says, judge truth and a judgment of peace in your gates. Now, what do you mean? Truth and peace? V'aloi b'makam sheyesh mishpat ein shalom, or v'makam sheyesh shalom ein mishpat. On the face of it, where there's a mishpat, where the dayanim, paskin, your chayim, your zakai, then there's no shalom, because each one thinks that, after all, I was right, and I got wronged in Beis Din. Okay, they accept the din on themselves, like we have in Pirkei Avos, k'kibul aleihem es hadin. Nevertheless, each one still may continue to think that he was right. So there's no true shalom because of that. And when there's shalom, because they made a pshara, a mishpat, then there's no mishpat, because by definition, the mishpat means that one side won and one side lost. Ela ezo mishpat sheyesh bei shalom, so Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says, what is a mishpat that contains shalom, hevi emezeh bitzua? Then that would have to be bitzua. That would be making a pshara. So we see, he says that the pasuk is telling us that you should make a pshara. We find a similar concept by David HaMelech, where the pasuk says, "Vayhi David oisa mishpat tzedakah," that David was doing judgment and tzedakah for the people. So again, the same question: "Vale kol makom sheyesh mishpat in tzedakah or tzedakah in mishpat," where you have tzedakah, you don't have mishpat, and where you don't have tzedakah, and tzedakah is not mishpat, because mishpat means this is how it is. There's no tzedakah, there's no favoritism or whatever. Tzedakah implies that you're going beyond the fnim mishras hadin. So which is it? So therefore, it's referring to Bitsua. So David, where possible, would try to make a compromise, and so we see that that's the right thing to do. So the Gemara interjects over here. Here we're bringing a long braisa from Tosefta, but here the Gemara interjects the following point. The Gemara is next going to bring another opinion. So the Gemara says, "Asan the Tanakama." The following statement of the Braisa that's going to give a different explanation of the pasuk about David is going to go back to the opinion of the Tanakama, namely Rabbi Eliezer ben Yishua Rabbi Yisrael Glili, where again he had said you're not allowed to do a pshara. So how would he explain the pasuk by David? So the Gemara says, "Asan the Tanakama." Now with the next lines of the Braisa, then we're going to go back to the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yishua Rabbi Yisrael Glili, because the Braisa continues, Donas Adin, when the Dayan or the Dayanim judge the case, Zikah Sazakai V'chiyav Sachayev, he declares the one who's supposed to be innocent, and the one who's guilty, V'rosh Nischayev Oni Momen, but now he sees the poor person, the poor person now owes money, and he can't afford it, V'shivim Lo Mitzvah Beisoy, and now therefore the Dayan goes and pays the Oni out of his own pocket, Zem Mishpat Tzedakah, that would be the real Mishpat Tzedakah, Mishpat Lazer Tzedakah Lazer. So now you can truly call that, says Rabbi Eliezer ben Yishua Rabbi Yisrael Glili, that you can truly call Mishpat and Tzedakah. Because now, yeah, Mishpat Lazer, it's Tzedakah Lazer. The one has had Mishpat Lazer, it's Tzedakah Lazer. He's truly done Mishpat. That now the one person has won his case who was supposed to. And you also have Tzedakah. So Mishpat Lazer, he did the Mishpat for the right one because he gave him the money that he was supposed to be getting. Or tzedakah lozeh, shilim lamitech beisay, and he also did tzedakah for the other one by paying him out of pocket. So Rabbi Eliezer, Vnoshe Rabbi Yosef, really would explain that's what David was doing. Not that he was making a pshara, because again, Rabbi Eliezer holds, once it comes to Beis Din, then you can't make a pshara anymore. And in fact, v'chein b'David huomer, as in fact we find by David, v'hi David osim mishpat tzedakah l'chalamai, mishpat l'zeh shehechzu l'osim amonai, or tzedakah l'zeh shehechzu l'osim amonai. So we see, in other words, he says that David actually did that. Marshall takes out those words because it seems to be just basically repeating what it said before. There is, in fact, an interesting explanation in that David HaMelech himself says in Tehillim, "Osisi mishpat v'tzedek bal tanicheni la'oshkai." David says, "I've done mishpat and tzedek. Don't leave me to those who would want to wrong you." So there's an explanation in it that David is saying, given that I'm doing that mishpat and tzedek, like we're saying over here, then don't allow that people are going to end up taking advantage of me. Two people are going to come and pretend to do a din Torah, and then one of them is going to say, well, I'm poor, I can't afford to pay. So David, you pay on my behalf as you usually do, and therefore and now it's going to turn out that they took advantage of David and took something from him that he wasn't supposed to. So David is saying, even though I do things this way, don't allow people to take advantage of me in this way. So you know what I said? I skipped a whole part before. I don't know how I did that. Okay, so I skipped a whole part before. Sorry. Reb Meir, I'm going back earlier on the Omer. Reb Meir Omer, never but say Allah Keneged Yehuda. After Reb Eliezer's opinion, we have the opinion of Reb Meir that the word Betseya in Betseya Berach Nietz Hashem is actually referring to Yehuda. In last week's parasha, when Yehuda tells his brothers, you know, instead of killing Yosef, we should sell him. So the mayor learns, what profit will we have if we kill our brother? Instead, let's sell him to the Ishmaelim. So the mayor says, the pasuk Hashem is telling us, anybody who blesses Yehuda and said he did the right thing is angering Hashem. Because what do you mean? Yehuda shouldn't have done that. As Rashi mentions on the pasuk, eventually the brothers themselves said to Yehuda, you know, if you had told us to return him to Yaakov, we would have done that. So instead, Yehuda did the wrong thing by telling him to sell him. So on that, the pasuk says, somebody who blesses the Beit Seya, Yehuda, who said Mabetza, who made a pshara over there, is angering Hashem. So we see, in other words, because Yehuda made a pshara without even checking with Yosef. He just did it unilaterally. But the point is that otherwise, a pshara is a fine thing to do, the mayor says. There is a lot about that. The fact is, we do find various mefoshim that do seem to praise Yehuda to a certain extent that he did the right thing. But here the Gemara is saying, according to the mayor, you shouldn't do that. So one answer is the mayor would. So in fact, for example, the Targum on the pasuk Miteref Bni Olisa in Parashas Vayechi in the Bracha to Yehuda, you, my son, have gone up from the prey. So there is in fact an explanation that Yaakov is complimenting him that he didn't harm Yosef. But according to this Gemara, according to the mayor, that wouldn't work out. So another way of understanding that is he's telling him, Marsha explains that according to the mayor, the Targum means that the pasuk is saying that. That you withheld yourself in the matter of Tamar, that you did the right thing over there, that you didn't have her condemned to death, and you admitted publicly that you had relations with her. So in that case, so he's not complimenting him for what he did with Yosef at all, because according to the mayor, he shouldn't have done that. On the other hand, Marsha discusses further on it, and one interesting point Marsha says is that maybe, in fact, the word Berech over here is meant in the euphemistic sense. It means Fakir, anybody who curses out Yehuda and says you could have done better is Menayetz, is blaspheming, because Yehuda did what he could under the circumstances. Then there's also an explanation that Yehuda did the right thing, but why is he mentioning it in terms of money, Mabetza? He should have told them that's the right thing to do, etc. So there's a number of different explanations what Remeir means over here. Again, I'd skipped this part before, so now getting back down to further down on the Omer where we were. So again, we're saying with David HaMelech according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosef Rabbi Yosef Aglili, David was doing not doing a pshara. He was doing a regular, full-fledged judgment, but afterwards he was reimbursing the poor person. Marsha brings that point that I mentioned about Asisi Mishpat Vatzedek, that David is asking, given that I'm doing that, Hashem, please don't let cheaters take advantage of me. Well, the Gemara asks, Kashalei LeRebbe. Well, Rebbe wondered about that explanation. If you're telling me that Mishpat Tzedakah L'chol Amo refers to this practice of David to reimburse the poor person, how can you say L'chol Amo? La'aniyim mi bar leit, should say to the poor people. The whole Jewish people are not poor. L'chol Amo suggests that David is doing something on behalf of the whole Jewish people. Ella, Rebbe Omer, so rather Rebbe says, Afapi Shaloi Shiva Mitech Besei. No, David didn't reimburse the poor person from his house. Nevertheless, Zehu Mishpat Tzedakah. Nevertheless, Rebbe says that can be classified as Mishpat Tzedakah, Mishpat Lazeh, Tzedakah Lazeh. You can still call it Mishpat and Tzedakah respectively. Mishpat Lazeh Shehechso Loi Mamonei, the Mishpat for the one who won the case, because he got back his money, or tzedakah lazeh, but it can be tzedakah for the poor person as well. Shahotzik zeila mitachas yadeh. He took something that was stolen out of him. The fact that he helped that person overcome, that he had stolen goods in his possession, in effect, because he was denying a claim or whatever, and now David makes him pay it, that itself is a tzedakah for him. So it doesn't have to be, says Rebbe, that he actually reimbursed the poor people. Because otherwise, in other words, this person would deserve punishment. Menashemayim, for withholding money that he shouldn't have kept. So in fact, the question is the Yafei Mara and the Yerushalmi asks, so what's the chiddush? I mean, every dayan does that, and the answer is, you're right. We're not saying any chiddush of what David did. We're just saying, in other words, that the pasuk wants to make a point that the pasuk mentions David doing mishpat tzedakah l'chol amo, and then it mentions Yoav was in charge of the army, meaning, as the Gemara explains elsewhere, that Yoav was successful in his battles only because David was doing mishpat tzedakah. So the pasuk is not highlighting something special that David did, but it's highlighting why Yoav won his wars is in the schutz of David. The Gemara continues, and the Braisa continues, Reb Shimon Menasi Omer, Shnayim Shabo, it depends about this matter of making a pshara. Shnayim Shabo lefonechal adin, two people come to you in front of you for a din Torah, Ad Shalei Tishma Divrehen, before you listen to what they say, Oy Mishatishma Divrehen, the Iatiadea, Lahechan Din Noita, or even after you've heard what they said, but you don't yet know which way it's going to incline, you haven't yet analyzed it, and you haven't yet started to figure out who is more likely to win, then Rav Shimon Menasya says, at that point, after Rashoy Lomelahan, Tsu Vitsu, then you can tell them, go make a pshara between yourselves. Mishatishma divrehen, but says Rav Shimon Menasya, once you heard what they have to say, and you have a good idea which way the din Torah is going to end up, even though you haven't yet given the psak din, then you're not allowed to tell them to go make a pshara, because at that point, then already you're far enough into the din Torah that you can't do that. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Poter Mayim Reshis Modern. The pasuk is Poter Mayim. If you want the simple meaning of the pasuk is something like Poter Mayim, when a person lets loose water, Reshis Modern. That's like the beginning of the fight. In other words, the metaphor that Shlomo is using in the simple sense of the pasuk is something like the same way as a big flood begins with a little leak. The same way, in other words, the beginning of a fight begins with a little tiny thing. But here, he's understanding, here, Reb Shimon Menasya is understanding the word poter, Meloshon poter. Poter mayim, if you want to pater yourself from an argument, which is going to be like a flood of water, as the Gemara is going to bring later. So, Reishis Modern, at the beginning of the quarrel, then it has to be, as the pasuk continues, V'lifnei hisgala hariv netosh. Before the fight is exposed, hisgala is Meloshon hisgala with a hey. Sometimes a hay and an ayin can interchange. Hariv, l'fnei hisgala hariv, before the fight is open, netosh, abandon it. Meaning, in other words, sort of Shimon Menasya says, it means, koidim shenisgala hariv, before the fight has been exposed, meaning before you have a good idea what the result of this argument is going to be in terms of what the din is going to be, atiyochol noitshoy, then you're able to abandon it and you're able to tell them make a pshara. But Mishinis Gala Hariv, once it's been exposed, once you have a good idea what the ultimate psak din is going to be, Iyatar Yochal Noitroy, then Reb Shimon Menasya says at that point you can't abandon it. You have to give the din as it is, no more time for Pshara. So in other words, the Oroch HaNer explains the pasuk is saying two different things. Reishis Modern, ideally get rid of the argument entirely, start a pshara at least at the beginning. But if you didn't, then at least do it before Lifnei Hisgala Hariv, before you know which way the Din Torah is likely to go. So far it comes out we have many different opinions about when you can do a pshara. You have Rabbi Shua ben Korcha, you have Rabbi Eliezer ben Oshad, Rabbi Yitzhak Levi saying absolutely not. As soon as it comes to Beis Din, you're not allowed to. Then you have Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Meir who say that the pasuk of Vetzei Beirach is not talking about a pshara. So according to them, it would be fine to do a pshara, but there's no mitzvah to do it. And we have Rabbi Shua ben Korcha saying that it's a mitzvah to do it. And then we have now Rabbi Shimon Manasseh says it depends what stage of the Din Torah we're at. Later on, the Gemara is going to explain the nuances or differences between the different opinions over here. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Rish Lakish, or really it's supposed to be Rabbi Shurban Lakish Omar, this is a continuation of the Braisa. Here's another din in this connection. Shnaim Shabola din, two people come to a din Torah, Echad Rach v'Echad Kosher, one of them is gentle and the other one is harsh, which means, in other words, one of them is going to listen to what the Dayanim say, and the other one is going to be quarrelsome, and Rashi just says Bal Meriva Matriach Dayanim. He's a quarrelsome person, and he's going to bug the Dayanim if he doesn't get his way. So that's one way of understanding it. Other Mefarshim understand that also the Rach and Kosher can mean the Kosher is somebody who actually is going to harass the Dayan and actually cause him trouble and actually cause him financial or personal or whatever trouble. So actually Tishma Divrehen. So says Rabbi Shurban Lakish, before you hear what they have to say, Oymish Tishma Divrehen, the Iyate Yedeh Lahechan Adin Noita. Similarly, like the Rabbi Shimon Manasseh had said, even after you heard their arguments, but you don't know which way the judgment is likely to incline, after Rashi. Then you're allowed to tell them, you know what, I don't want to deal with this case. Because you don't want to deal with the nudnik or this powerful person or whatever. Because after all, you can think to yourself, the powerful one might end up being declared guilty. And it comes out now that this guy is going to be pursuing and harassing the Dayan and causing him financial losses or who knows what. So therefore you're allowed to recuse yourself in the first place and say I'm not going to judge the Din Torah. With that said though, Rishonim bring that if you're a regular duly constituted Dayan and this is your job, you're the Dayan, you're the Beis Din for the city, then you don't really have that. The Rambam brings this and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, then you don't really have that. If you're Mamunah L'Rabim, if you're appointed to judge the Rabbim, then you don't have that out. You have to do it regardless, and you'll have to take your chances with the tough guy. Anyway, continues Rabbi Shua ben Lakish, Mishatishma Divrehen, once you heard what they have to say, Vati Yedeh Lahechen Adin Noita, and you have a good idea which way the judgment is likely to incline, Iyati Yocholoim Lahen, Eini Nizka Kochem, then you can't say, I don't want to be involved anymore. As the Pasuk says, don't be afraid, Lois Guru, means don't be afraid of any person. So at that point, once you've already heard the case, and you have a good idea, lahechan adin noita. So then, in that, then at that point, you know, then at that point, you just have to trust in Hashem and just see the case through. Okay, so the Gemara brings, by the way, a couple of other drashas on those words, lo yisaguru mipneish, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korchoim, minayim l'talmud sh'yoshev l'fnei rabbi. How do we know? Another din we can learn from that pasuk. A Talmud is sitting in front of his Rebbe. And there's a din Torah between a rich and a poor person. The Talmud notices that there's an argument that you can present that will be good for the poor person and that will be bad for the rich person, that it will cause the poor person to win the case. Meanwhile, his Rebbe is mistakenly not realizing that point, and therefore he's about to judge the case the other way. How do we know? Minayin, shalo yishrek, how do we know? The Talmud should not be quiet. He should inform the Rebbe about the mistake that he's making. Now, you would think, the point is, the Yad Ramah points out, you have three reasons you would think to not. Number one, he's only a Talmud. Number two, it's not covered for his Rebbe. And number three, he's likely now to be harassed by that rich person. Nevertheless, he can't be quiet. How do we know that? Same thing. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, it's the Guru, Mipnei Ish, don't be afraid of a person. And that also means, so in this case, don't be afraid to speak up. Rav Chanan Omer, and Rav Chanan explains, when the word lo saguru doesn't just mean don't be afraid, it means lo sachnis dvarecha mipnei ish, don't hold in your words because of a person. Even though it's your Rebbe who's paskening the Din Torah, and you would think to have derech eretz for him, you shouldn't speak up. Lo sachnis, don't bring in your words, meaning, in other words, don't hide your words and say, I'm not going to speak up out of covenant for my Rebbe. No, you have to do that. So in other words, when it comes to the poor and the rich person, it's not that you're afraid of them. It's just that you want to give them. So in other words, Tosfos explains the point is not so much that you're afraid. It's more that just you're thinking to give him covered. So therefore, Rav Chanan is stressing that no, the words lo saguru means don't bring in your words and don't hide and conceal them out of respect for the rich person because you don't want him to lose the case. And the Braisa continues, V'yiyu edim yodin asmimi edim, the edim, when they're coming in front of Beis Din, should know, if they testify falsely, they should realize that they're not just testifying falsely against the boss of Adam, they should realize they're testifying, so to speak, against Hashem, because Hashem is going to require, Hashem is going to end up having to pay back this person who lost unjustly. Hashem is going to have to end up reimbursing him somehow, so it's like the edim are matriach on Hashem to do that. So they should be aware that who they're judging, whom they're testifying about, and before whom they're testifying, that Hashem is watching them testify. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about that the Dayanim give them a very strong warning before they testify, but here, the Braita is also mentioning the points that they should realize for themselves. And who is going to punish them if they're lying? The two men who have the argument should stand before Hashem. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to learn that Shnei HaNoshim actually refers over here to the two Edim. So the Edim are actually standing before Hashem, and they should realize that. And the Braisa continues, the Dayanim should also realize whom they're judging, because again, they're not just judging the two Baal Edinim, they're also judging Hashem, because again, if they pass him wrongly, then they're, so to speak, forcing Hashem to make it up to the losing party. So before whom they're judging, and who's going to punish them if they do wrongly. Hashem stands in the congregation of Hashem. Meaning in the congregation of the Dayanim, the Kedav of the Kim Yishpot. So Hashem is judging together with the Dayanim. V'chein b'Yehoshaphat to him, where we find Yehoshaphat, when he appointed Dayanim to travel all over Eretz Yehuda and judge the people, he says to them, V'yomer al ha-shoftim, Ru'u ma'atam osim, look and pay attention to what you're doing. Ki lo'la odim tishpatu, you're not just judging people. Ki im la'Hashem, you're judging Hashem, so a Dayan has to realize that responsibility. And Braisa finishes off, so a Dayan might think, well, then why should I even bother? Why should I get involved in this tsar? I make a mistake, and I'm going to be, and Hashem is going to be angry at me, and the rich person, and the tough person, or whatever, might pursue me, etc. No, Talmud Loima, the pasuk continues. That same pasuk with Yehoshaphat is the pasuk finishes off the imochem b'dvar mishpat, with you is a matter of mishpat. In other words, Hashem is not expecting you to be superhuman. Ein l'dayan ela masha ein avroyas, the Dayan should only follow what he sees with his eyes. In other words, don't worry that you may not have all the facts in front of you, and you may end up passing wrongly. Hashem only expects you to go according to what you see and what you perceive. So therefore, don't feel so bad if you do end up making a mistake. Hashem will only hold you responsible for what you could have known. And also, Marsha explains another meaning of it as well. Hashem will give you siyata d'shmaya, that you won't make a mistake in the first place. So yes, you, the Dayan, should not think I'm getting into a difficult situation over here and I'm not gaining anything out of it. No, you should realize that Hashem wants you to do it, and Hashem expects you to do your best, and Hashem will help you to do your best. Okay, so thus far the Braisa, and then the Gemara is going to continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll analyze it a little more.